Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The 9 o'clock hour of the Alex Dono Show here on 560 WQAM. Streaming all over the internet, my friends, WQAM.com on your computer or on your smartphone, the radio.com app. However you listen, we appreciate your patronage here tonight. I never thought cheese would be so polarizing. Some guy says that Munster wipes its you-know-what with mozzarella and Swiss. I don't know, man. Like, give me the best mozzarella and the best Munster and the best mozzarella kicks its ass, in my opinion. I mean, if you're just getting like the cheap shredded stuff, like in the same aisle where you get the yogurt, like you get the bag of, sure, that's probably crappy mozzarella. But you get the good stuff with the buffalo milk. Oh, there's nothing I love better than that. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line. But please do not text and drive. 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. You know, it's a good thing that I'm not a betting man, because before these NBA finals started, I would have put my money on Kevin Durant to be the finals MVP. And I know that he's had some questionable performances prior to this series, or had questionable performances prior to this series, but I thought he would really wake up in the finals. And I thought that given what he did to Cleveland in the finals last year, one of the more impressive final series we've seen from any player in the last 20 years. Not the most impressive, because LeBron James and even Dwayne Wade in 06 probably have arguments for that. But a very impressive final series for Kevin Durant, except game one to me was so bad for KD. I don't see him coming back from that enough to win finals MVP. And with what Steph Curry did last night, he is the odds-on front runner for that. Curry made all five of his three-point attempts in the fourth quarter to bring him for 9 in that finals game, breaking the record for three-pointers in an NBA finals game. Ray Allen had the previous record back in 2010 with the Boston Celtics. And Mike Miller had 7, very close to that record, 7 against the Oklahoma City Thunder in a game in 2012. But Steph Curry now stands alone in history. And it was apparently motivated by the D-bag move by Kendrick Perkins, not moving his legs out of the way. I mean, he obviously knew what he was doing there. I'll admit, when I first saw that, I kind of thought, yeah, that's kind of a heady play by Kendrick Perkins. A little bit of gamesmanship. But then you think about, with Curry backing up kind of blindly, not seeing whose legs are in the way, how dangerous that play could have been if Steph Curry had ended up seriously injuring himself by tripping over Kendrick Perkins, who was just too much of an a-hole in that moment to move his legs out of the way. If you play the result of that, pretty awful thing that he did there for a guy who's not even active. So at first when I saw it, I said, yeah, you know what? That's a little bit of a smart gamesmanship by Kendrick Perkins, but you think about what the result could have been. Pretty terrible move on his part. Steph Curry got in his face a little bit. His teammates were pissed about it, and then he goes out there and starts hitting circus shots in the fourth quarter. And there were a couple of minutes there early in that fourth when he and LeBron James were dueling. That was some of the most fun that I've had in these playoffs, period. To watch LeBron hit a three, and then Curry hit a three from 5 feet farther out than LeBron hits a three. LeBron hits another bucket. Steph Curry hits a circus three. To see them going tit for tat like that. And, you know, last night the duel went to Steph Curry en route to his 33-point finish. That, to me, is what the NBA Finals is all about. That stage of two of the best players in the world. I mean, three of the best players in the world, if you include Kevin Durant, who did bounce back with a nice game yesterday, was more engaged distributing. The D was on point. LeBron James only shot 2 of 4 when KD was guarding him. I thought KD had a nice game last night, but Steph Curry was the guy who had the elite game. And the ratings so far, the TV ratings so far in these NBA finals have been excellent. So maybe that bucks that narrative a little bit of finals fatigue, that people are so tired of watching the same teams in the finals over and over and over and over again. I think America eats this up. Now, I think if the same two teams that you were watching over and over and over again were like the, you know, you remember what was it in like 2006 or 2007 when the Detroit, it might have been like 05 maybe, 05 finals, Detroit Pistons and San Antonio Spurs, like no star power in that series whatsoever. Yeah. If those teams played four straight NBA finals against each other, then I think America would give up on the NBA. And those are also two of the smaller markets for the NBA. So having San Antonio and Detroit locked in with no super, I know that you had great players, right? Fantastic players on both sides, but you didn't have transcendent personalities like LeBron James and Steph Curry. Yeah, if those two teams had met four straight years in the finals, would be a disaster. But when you're talking about LeBron James and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green going at it four straight years, people do eat that up, man. Texter writes in, I thought Steph Curry was a Harlem Globetrotter in his former life. Can you even imagine? I know that there have been documents of this and videos out there of like what his training routine is like, how many shots he shoots in the gym. I mean, I wonder like how young Steph Curry started and how just unconscious it is for that guy to shoot long threes. And he makes it cool now. You're running the floor, you pull up behind the three-point line rather than trying to go to the rim. You see kids out on the schoolyard doing that, kids out in their neighborhood court doing that, pulling up for threes like Steph Curry instead of, you know, going to the rim like Jordan would have. It's becoming a trend nowadays. By the way, if you're worried about the LeBron James' disgusting red eyeball, I was reading a diagnosis from Traverse City optometrist Dr. William Pothoff Jr. Very distinguished. Like, yeah, I would imagine Dr. William Pothoff Jr., his family, like, owned a yacht club, right? Like, he's probably, he hangs out with Mickey Arison on the weekends. The diagnosis from this optometrist will come as a relief to LeBron James's daughter, who was a little weirded out about it after she FaceTimed him with her bloody-eyed father. In a blog post written following Game 1, Pothoff explained that the blood-red spot in James's eye was indeed caused by blood resulting from an eye injury known as a subconjunctival hemorrhage. It is essentially a bruise to the eyeball. No treatment is needed, he says, for a subconjunctival hemorrhage as they are self-limited, he writes. Given the limited nature of LeBron's eye bleed, I would expect it to perhaps be completely resolved by Game 3. So you may no longer see the Terminator red eyeball for LeBron James come Game 3, which I think only added to the sadness in his eyes when J.R. Smith came to the bench after that mistake in Game 1 and some of the memes going out there of LeBron. It only makes things look sadder for him, I think. It's safe to say that Steph Curry is finally playing like a Finals MVP. He's never really played up to his abilities in previous finals. That's right, because in the KD was Finals MVP last year, and rightfully so. LeBron James won it in 2016 when Cleveland won it, and Andre Iguodala was Finals MVP back in 2015. So Steph Curry has never won that award before. Curious as it may seem, with two championships for his team and two regular MVPs, no Finals MVPs yet. So he could actually be in line to take that award now for the first time in his already illustrious career.
Dono, fun fact, the last two least watched NBA Finals in the last 15 years were the Spurs against the Cavs in 2007.
Oh, that was a bad one too.
And then the Spurs against the Pistons, like you said, in 2005.
Yeah, that was a brutal series. And that one went seven games. That was even worse, right? When it's a series that bad, like two teams that nobody cares about outside of the small cities they play in, the only thing that made Spurs Pistons even worse in 05 was the fact that it went all seven games. I mean, you wanted to gouge your eyes out, but at least Spurs-Cavs in 07 was over in four. Spurs swept them, no problem.
That Spurs-Detroit series, there was only one game that was decided by less than 5 points.
Oh, my God. That is awful. Never complain about these NBA Finals. So who do you think it's going to be next year? Assuming LeBron leaves Cleveland. Let's give a couple hypotheticals out there, right? If LeBron stays east, if he goes to Philadelphia, probably going to be Warriors Sixers in the finals. Safe to say. But what if LeBron goes west? If LeBron goes to Los Angeles, I think it would still be the Warriors, because the Lakers, even with LeBron and Paul George, still don't get past Golden State. So if LeBron goes to the Lakers, I think it's Golden State-Boston in the finals. Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward back, presumably. I don't think even Philly, without LeBron, is getting past them in the East. So if LeBron goes to L.A., I think it's Golden State-Boston. LeBron goes to Philadelphia, I think it's Golden State-Philly. You get LeBron versus the Warriors again. If LeBron goes to Houston, I think it's Houston-Boston. I think that becomes the final series. Am I crazy to say that LeBron James plus CP3 plus James Harden probably squeaks past the Golden State Warriors in what should be a pretty epic Western Conference Finals, and that would set up then Houston versus Boston in the NBA Finals? That's kind of the way that I would see that going down.
Am I the only one that feels like while adding LeBron to Houston would be great, he doesn't necessarily fit their offensive scheme?
Yeah, no, he absolutely doesn't. I don't think he fits Philadelphia's scheme either. Yeah, I think that you would have to change any scheme for LeBron. So if he goes to Philly, Ben Simmons has got to play off the ball. He goes to Golden State, CP3 and Harden are going to have to play off the ball. So you're going to have to make a lot of adjustments. Obviously, if he stays in Cleveland, he runs the show. But what kind of clowns does he have his teammates? If he goes to Los Angeles, then obviously you build the team around him. Why don't you just draft all of LeVar Ball's kids to play to be his disciples there? So yeah, I think it's why they say there's no perfect fit for him. But I think any fit is better than Cleveland at this point. What if LeBron goes to Miami, hypothetically speaking, of course? I don't think it's going to happen, but Las Vegas thinks there's a chance. Something we're going to talk to Ira Winderman about. But Bovada gives the Heat 25-1 odds, which are the six best odds to reacquire LeBron James. BetOnline.com gives the Heat 20-1 odds, even better odds to bring LeBron back. There's not a chance in hell in my mind. Can I make that bold prediction right now that come free agency, Pat Riley is not bringing LeBron James back to South Florida? He's not. I think next year's team is going to be this year's team plus Deion Waiters healthy. I think that's going to be next year's team primarily. And maybe you'll find a way to ship Hassan Whiteside out of town for a bag of peanuts. But LeBron is not coming here. You don't have the pieces or the cap space to make that happen. You don't have the pieces to trade to create the cap space to make that happen. You don't have the expiring contracts to make that happen. But if LeBron did come to Miami, who's still here would be the question. Let's say Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic are still here. And if LeBron comes here, Dwayne Wade's coming back. Don't kid yourselves. Like, right? They want to run that back one more time. But Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, Hassan Whiteside, Tyler Johnson are probably gone if that happens. But if you could have LeBron James here with Dwayne Wade, you think Goran would still be here, though? Or is that just kind of wishful thinking on my part?
No, I think they'd have to ship him.
Man, because I know you'd want to keep him here, because if you're bringing LeBron James back here, your window, you're in a win-now window. It's why you'd be willing to give up young pieces, but you would want, you know, your 32-year-old, quote-unquote, all-star point guard still to be here. So I know you'd want to keep him here. Rodney Magruder, Deion Waiters, you probably would have to ship out. I don't know, though. Maybe Deion Waiters start at the two, D-Wade come off the bench in that unit. If LeBron James comes here and you can keep a few of those pieces just to keep things interesting, are you better than Boston with Kyrie and Hayward back? Are you better than Philadelphia, who just beat you in five games, sans LeBron, of course? Are you better than the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid show out there in Philadelphia? I think anywhere in the East, LeBron's team becomes the favorite. I think that includes Miami. Even if he's not playing with a lights-out supporting cast, if you can just keep a couple of those pieces around LeBron here, I think you become the best team in the East. I think the only place that I see LeBron going to where they don't at least make it to the NBA Finals would be Los Angeles. I think if he stays east, whether it be in Miami or Philly, he's an NBA finalist. Knicks, ooh. LeBron and Kristaps and David Fizdale reunion. I think they're in the finals as well with LeBron. Now, you're not winning the West, or you're not winning the championship, though, because you're not beating Golden State out West. I don't know. Do you think LeBron to the Knicks don't even make they're not better than Boston or Philadelphia, Toronto, Washington? You don't think they're better than those teams?
I don't know, because are we assuming that Kristaps plays next year?
Oh, yeah, he may miss next year also.
With a torn ACL, that's why.
Yeah, so. LeBron's not going there. He'd be the only guy on that team. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Any idea how good the Marlins draft pick Connor Scott is? Texter writes, I want to bring on Larry Bluestein, who is my expert in the Major League Baseball draft. I kid you not, Tito. After the Marlins made this pick, Blue texted me like three pair. You know how it doesn't even fit on one text message? Like it continues on to like three. He sent me like his own scouting report on Connor Scott. I want Blue to say a few words about it next year on QAM.
Radio.com.
Back here on the Alex Dono Show, 560 WQAM. So a texter wrote in, any idea how good the Marlins draft pick Connor Scott is? Outfielder, first pick of the Derek Jeter era. And our boy Blue, Larry Bluestein, SouthFloridaHighSchoolSports.com. He has been covering minor league baseball, baseball prospects, and Major League Baseball for decades. And Blue, I know you were all over. You are all over this baseball draft. Marlins select Connor Scott. You happy with that pick? And obviously it's fulfilling a need, but is this the right player to fill that?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing, Alex, and thanks so much for having us on. And I'll tell you, the great thing about it is I would think that when you look at the draft and you look at what a lot of the experts who watch a lot of this and go to the, you know, because I went to the area code games and I saw a lot of these kids, that they all have different reasonings for taking kids. And he is one that probably was slotted 17 through 24. So it, not terrible, you know, but then when the Marlins got a chance to see him and they got a, he's a big kid, about 6'4". He runs extremely well. He's a center fielder for the future. I mean, he covers a lot of ground, a good hitter, just learning more and more about, you know, defensively, I think that's a selling point. He's got a real, a plus arm, a really good arm. He covers a lot of ground. Like I said, he's fast. And you don't find a guy that tall to run as well as he does. And, yeah, he's going to hit, you know. And certainly, to me, I was going in honestly thinking that, you know, let's break tradition for some of the pitchers. You know, because
– Well, and Blue, wasn't there a pitcher on the board that let people on Twitter are kind of angry that fell and the Marlins didn't take him?
Well, you mean the kid from Florida? You mean is that the guy? I mean Brady Singer. Well, here's the thing, and this is the only thing I can tell everybody: if he fell, it was for a reason.
Okay.
You know, I mean, these guys scout him really, really well. The only guy that I was looking at for the Marlins, if they were going to go outfield, to go to Travis Swaggerty from South Alabama. Here's a guy who, you know, he's a left-handed hitter. He's smaller, but he's really quick. But he's got power, and I thought that. And the Pirates got him at 10. And the only other guy who probably would have been, you know, if you're going to go outfield, and that's what I was thinking. Either him or the kid Rocker, and he's falling, and I don't know why. That's Tricky Rocker's son, but he's been falling quite a bit. But I said, you know, let's go after one of those guys. You're not going to get Kyler Murray, because here's a kid who was signed to Oklahoma to play football at quarterback, but at the same time he was selected at 9 by the A's. So you say, you know, bye-bye football. I mean, because he's slotted to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, some guys with local ties, which are great. and we had him right off the bat. You know, I mean, you know, starting and the guy who we watched, Jonathan India, who I think was the best player in the SEC this year, another Florida Gator, another local kid. Power, RBI power. He hit 17 home runs. I mean, I loved him, and he was the best. I thought he was the best third baseman in the draft. Here's a kid that may even change positions. You never know, but I think that he's a solid enough third baseman, and he hits for power. The other guy that a local kid with local ties, if you remember in the early years of the Marlins, they had David Weathers. Well, his kid is just amazing. I mean, he's a left-handed version of what Ryan was, a big kid out of Tennessee. And he obviously, I thought maybe he would fall to the Marlins, but he didn't. He got picked, selected by the Padres. And then, and you're waiting for some of the other local kids to get drafted. And they're up to around the 22nd pick now with the Rockies in the first round. But you look at all the guys, and there's nobody across. I mean, maybe where they were slotted, a Brady Singer dropping. I mean, here's a kid who's 6'5", and he was 10-1. I mean, the Florida Gators, should never lose. I mean, what they've had over the last 3 years, Alex, in the upper rounds of the draft, amazing, just amazing.
Well, Larry, what about for a later round? Because Jeff Conine's kid is also draftable. Could that be somebody the Marlins can get later on? Because you talk about local ties. Yeah. I don't think it'd be better than bringing in Mr. Marlin Jr.
26 home runs in 2 years at Duke.
Nice.
A brilliant kid. Tremendous defensive outfielder. A left-handed hitter. I mean, this kid... I mean, he could do it all. I mean, and I like him. I would love to see the Marlins get a guy with a baseball IQ like that to come on. And this is what you and I have talked about. It's not just, you could say the kid from Tampa Plant, great pickup because he's a local, he's a Florida guy, he'll start something off. But in truthful, it's what's going to happen probably from round 2 to around 32 that will affect and probably do exactly what Derek Jeter wanted to do. He wanted to revamp the entire minor league system. They have, for the most part, remember 32 new faces from last year in the minor leagues, and they're doing well. Jupiter's pulling away in the first half and is going to win. So we've said that's where their younger talent. So this is what the position is. You get a lot of these kids. Obviously, a kid like Scott Connor Connor Scott is going to have to go through rookie ball. He's not going to be able to because he's a young kid, and it'll take him a while. But on the other hand, I think he's accelerated a little bit more than a lot of the first-rounders that the Marlins have had recently. You talk about injury 2 years ago. The pitcher that they got had Tommy John surgery. Then 4 years ago, the kid Kolak. So they really haven't had traction with their number one pick. So hopefully this is a guy like some of the other organizations will ride him, take him along slowly because there are no rush. You can't be in any rush, especially with their plan. So bring them up slowly and like the Braves did with Acuna and with Ozzie Albies and, with Foltynewicz and all those guys. What they did is they brought them up slowly where they're all coming together. So I think that's his grand plan to get enough talent so in 3 years they can, push their way in and start making some big noise.
And this man has forgotten more baseball than most of us will know in a lifetime. Unbelievable knowledge here from Larry Bluestein. You want to check out his work at SFHS Sports. Sports.com. Follow him on Twitter at Larry Bluestein. Blue, I hope you had a great weekend, my friend.
Thanks so much, and we'll do a wrap-up of what the Marlins got over the
Absolutely.
Next couple of weeks, and everybody will get an opportunity to see what they have for the future.
Beautiful. Enjoy the rest of your evening, my friend.
You too. Thanks, Alex.
And like Blue always says, with the Marlins, they've sent you the message that Derek Jeter has sent you this message. Guys, this is about our farm system. This is about the future, right? It's why we got rid of everybody. Stanton, he gone. Ozuna, he gone. D. Gordon, he gone. We're getting rid of everybody because we're focusing on the future. We're focusing on building a generation of great baseball. So they basically told you the future of this team is in the farm system right now. They're with the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. They're being drafted. So you might as well, if you're a baseball fan in South Florida, if you focus on the quote-unquote major league product on the field right now, you're only going to be disappointed. You might as well look to the future because that's the message they're sending you anyway. I do like this whole bring back the teal thing this weekend for the 25th anniversary. Any chance they think about doing that permanently? I don't know what the resistance would be to that. I mean, anybody out there, does anybody out there say, you know, gosh, you know what I really love? I love the current Marlins logo and the current color scheme. I love everything about those uniforms. You're not going to find a soul who thinks the current swag is better than the classic swag. Everybody loves the teal. Everybody loves the actual anatomically correct looking Marlin instead of the one that looks like the aqua or the looks like the monorail at Disney World, the current logo. Everyone loves the old swag. I'm not saying you have to change your name back to Florida Marlins. I actually think Miami Marlins sounds better because there's another team in the state of Florida. So it sounds kind of ridiculous to say, well, we're the Florida Marlins, but oh, there's another team in Florida, the Tampa Bay Rays. So we don't really represent the entire state, but we're the Florida. I'm okay with Miami Marlins, especially since the team now plays in Miami proper. Well, they played Miami Gardens before. That kind of counts. But I'm okay with Miami Marlins, but I would much prefer bringing back the teal color scheme. If you could only bring back one throwback permanently, because a lot of the other teams in town are good about respecting their past. Like, you'll see the Heat wear throwbacks. You'll see the Dolphins a couple times a year wear the, you know, the 1972 era throwbacks. You know, at least the Miami Hurricanes now, they wear a uniform that is respectful and reflective of their swag from the 1980s. But if any of your South Florida teams could go back to a throwback uniform permanently and that become their regular gear, which one would you choose? 56022 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. I would go with the Dolphins throwback. Look, if you could tell me one of my favorite local teams is going to wear a classic throwback uniform permanently as their regular uniform, I don't think any of those pop as much as those Dolphin throwbacks that they usually will wear on like a primetime game, which you only have one of those this year, by the way, a Thursday nighter. But to me, like the Dolphins throwback, to me, I watch that and I just say, yes, that is what I'm looking for as a fan. Give me that for 16 games rather than 2 games a year, because the current uniforms, just boring, no sizzle there. That to me is the one you got to go with.
I like the Heat throwbacks better, to be honest.
I like them, but I don't think the Heat current uniforms look that bad, though.
No, I mean, if you're talking about, like, just throwbacks, though, I mean,
right,
the black and red with that lettering.
Yeah, I guess that their throwbacks do look awesome, but maybe they wear them enough that it spoils me, you know, because they do wear them several times a year. So that's probably why it's like I don't demand it as much. Like the Dolphins only give you a little taste of it a couple times a season. Marlins are going back to their throwbacks for the first time, you know, in the last 6 years since they changed over to the current crop. Yeah, I guess like if you could get me like these are exact replicas of like the 1983 Miami Hurricanes first national championship uniforms, that would be kind of dope. But I don't think that those look as cool as the throwback Dolphin unis. I don't know, man. Jeter needs money, Texter writes. Not well funded. Teal sucks. Is that from Gordo? Jeter needs money. Not well funded. Teal sucks. Conine kid hit 2 bombs today. Eliminated Georgia. Yeah, I hope they draft Jeff Conine's kid in one of these later rounds. Dolphins hands down, a Texter writes, which throwback they would want permanently. I just invested in, I've already received it. I ordered it on Amazon last week, the Inter Milan jersey for this coming season, which I think it's pretty reflective of. I mean, that team's been around since 1908. So if you want to go for like a really original throwback, you'd be wearing like polyester awful gear. But like it's a throwback that's pretty respectful of like 90s era with the stripe pattern. I'm really digging that. You know, with the World Cup coming up, I don't think there's any problem in this town. Like, hey, anybody that I talk to who's a soccer fan, you've got no problem picking a team to root for. Like, this is not like other markets, right? Like, I talk to so many people in this city, very passionate about, oh, I'm rooting for Colombia because I have family there. That's where my family is from. Or, you know, I'm rooting for Argentina because I love Messi so much. People down here don't have a problem picking a team to root for. I ended up going with Croatia. Epic Brozo, Brozovic and Perisic from Inter Milan on Croatia. I do think it's kind of genius, though, like, because you talk to people, if you're from Michigan, if you're from Seattle, if you're from St. Louis, you were all in with Team USA, and now you're like a spurned lover. You don't know who to root for. You've seen what that, who is it, like 23andMe or genealogy.com? They're doing that campaign where you take the DNA test. They tell you this is where your great-great-great-great-grandfather was from. Why don't you root for your roots? It's a clever marketing campaign that, oh, you may not realize your great-uncle was from Germany. Maybe I should root for Deutschland, who's probably going to win the cup anyway. Might as well jump on that bandwagon. Or, oh, my God, my great-great-great-grandfather, twice removed from my great-uncle, grew up in Nagasaki. Maybe I should root for Japan in this World Cup. I think the Root for Your Roots campaign is kind of clever because, A, it encourages you to spend money on those probably quite expensive DNA kits, and then it kind of gives you a passion for the game after that. I think that's kind of a cool marketing campaign. I'm almost afraid to take that test because, like, what if I'm not as Italian as I think I am? I mean, my father's family's from Italy, but what if, like, if they're, like, secretly Hungarian or something and they, like, migrated a century ago and didn't tell anybody about it? Like, I wouldn't want that bubble to be burst, man. We'll talk some NBA Finals. Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel will join us next here on QAM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.